Our next speaker is Blair Major. He's in law, and he's going to be talking to us about the interaction between legal and religious discussions and how that we can get growth of something more than both of them between those two. Blair. Thanks.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. So the question today, what knowledge will Canada need to thrive in an interconnected, evolving global landscape? Well, I think given the growing interconnectedness of our global community, Canadian society is becoming more and more socially complex. And part of this complexity can be seen in the intersections, which sometimes look more like spectacular collisions between religion and law. The obvious recent example would be the story about Mrs. Shack, a Muslim woman who would like to wear a religious face covering while taking the oath to become a Canadian citizen. Another example would be about a private Christian university, Trinity Western University, that would like to open a law school and the law societies and the lawyers who oppose them. The arguments and ideas batted back and forth in both of these situations are emotionally charged and polarizing. Meaningful public dialogue about them has become almost impossible, which has resulted in both going to the court system. So I think that sometimes we have a bit of a misguided faith in the power and the promise of knowledge, that if we can just find the right idea, then everyone will agree, or if we can maybe confidently silence everybody who doesn't agree. And this makes me hesitant to say what it is that I think Canada needs to know in order to find answers to the questions we encounter in interactions between law and religion. The difficulty is that law and religion are actually really complex things with a really complex history, and there's no way to clearly establish that one is right and the other is wrong, that either religion needs to bend to law or law needs to bend to religion. And we tried to do this, and it will be bonus points at the end of the discussion today if anybody knows what this is depicting. But in the last 900 years, we still haven't managed to figure it out. So maybe instead of trying to find ways to decide between religion and law, we should think more about the ways that they agree with each other. Now, agree isn't actually the best word choice here. In my research, I found it's much better to think about the connections between religion and law in terms of overlap. And so there are three points of overlap between law and religion that I want to mention today for our discussion. The first one is both religion and law ascribe special meanings to things through their own constructed symbolic systems. And these symbolic meanings are grounded for both religion and law in real experiences and real actions. Secondly, both religion and law constantly struggle to define their own boundaries of belonging. For law, what's unlawful, and for religion, what's orthodox or unorthodox. These boundaries are constantly moving and are always being pushed and pulled by dissenting voices. Thirdly, for both religion and law, community plays a central role. And this is especially in terms of constructing meanings and defining boundaries of belonging. So no doubt law and religion are different, I wouldn't want to say otherwise, or that they oftentimes, and maybe most times, disagree. But maybe, if we can focus our attention on these points of overlap, we might start to see that they can speak to each other in constructive ways, even though they disagree. So as an analogy, maybe we could think of law and religion as playing a similar tune, maybe like members of a jazz band. Their differences can be played together and can feed off each other. Since they're both trying to play the same song together, the tensions between them actually help make the song what it is. So what does it mean, what does Canada need to know then to thrive in the future? Well, to be a bit cheeky in answering the question, I'd like to say that the less we claim to know and the less we attempt to resolve tensions between religion and law, the better off we are. And this is because we can then take the risk which I think is essential, which is to let religious and legal ideas of meaning and belonging push and pull each other in a song that we're writing together, which we might call the development of Canadian values or of Canadian society. It's not that we should be ignorant or complacent about interactions between law and religion. To the contrary, by delving deep into both law and religion in their interactions, we discover the insight of intellectual humility. As Sherman Clark, a professor of law at the University of Michigan, helpfully said, What we seek is not the murkiness that can come from confusing things that could be clear, nor from mucking up something shallow until it's mucky enough to seem deep. Rather, the uncertainty we acknowledge and seek comes from seeing clearly how deep something really is. This capacity, which might better be called intellectual humility, is not the opposite of clear thought, but a consequence of it. Well, thank you very much for listening, and I look forward to the rest of the afternoon together.
Questions for Blair? Holly.
I don't claim that I have all the answers this day.
So you presented some really interesting hot button issues at the beginning. How would this framework that you're proposing interpret those issues? If you can maybe, don't explain all of them, but take one of them and kind of walk us through how the framework you're proposing would deal with those questions.
Right. Well, that's a really great question. And I'm going to kind of skirt answering it too much because it's something that I wanted to discuss at the roundtables, which is what's going to be following these short 5-minute presentations. But really quickly, I've been doing some writing on the Trinity Western University situation. I find it really interesting when we talk about intersections between religion and law, we tend to think about her, but we tend to forget about them. It's really interesting where a Christian group that has, you know, Christianity is sort of the fundamental, you know, core of Canadian society, and there's lots of research talking about that, how that can come up with so much sort of vitriolic response from lawyers, from law societies, when they're trying to become more involved in developing lawyers and training lawyers in our society. And so I think it's just really interesting to see how this unfolds. So I'm sorry, I just don't know how to actually answer your question really quickly. So maybe come to my table and we'll talk about it. How does that sound? Sorry, that's so dodgy.
Do we have other questions? Paul, and then Will?
That was very interesting and very large. Let me connect what you're saying in the project that you're discussing with Will's opening talk, because Will, correct me if I'm getting this wrong, Will refocused the question in a really interesting way, not by talking exactly about what Canada needs going into the future, but rather Canada's place and the Canadian Academy's place in a global knowledge economy. How do you see this wonderful kind of coming together of religion and law? How do you see that possibly leading and contributing to working through serious problems elsewhere in the world?
Well, it would be that's another big question, and this is a big topic, so it invites those types of questions. I think that what I'm attempting to do in my research and, you know, thinking about the Trinity Western Law School is a matter of trying to reframe the way that we think about these two entities or two traditions or bodies or discourses of religion in law. In the Western tradition, our history is the separation of powers. And I just think that if we think about that differently, if we can start to encourage thinking about that differently in Canada, that would be a leading model for reframing the way that we talk about the connections between religion and society through the mechanisms of law. That, I think, could be something that the world could look to. Now, I think Canada, obviously, in terms of a lot of different things, like when we're talking about knowledge production, there's multilingualism in Canada, which is a significant part of its history. This is my topic, and what I'm suggesting is sort of the creation of knowledge is very similar to what interdisciplinary studies would suggest is the formation of knowledge generally, which is not in sort of creating these silos of understanding that are just expert understandings, but it's actually in the connection between things that are outside of what is thought to be the core of knowledge, or what is thought to be leading us towards knowledge. And it's in those interactions and in those synergies, in that tension, that is where knowledge is actually created. So I would say that, you know, Canada and its experience linguistically, culturally, between French, English, and Aboriginal communities, I think actually is a wonderful place to be able to explore some of these types of themes.
I mean, I don't know if you've applied state to shirk, but I mean, do you feel the existing granting systems and the way that you have to apply to a particular committee works against this kind of research? Or, I mean, I don't know what experience you've had.
I can't ask that directly. It's a really good question because you're applying directly to a sort of like a body that's been formed, right? I mean, a part of the difficulty, and this is going back to the Sherman-Clark quote at the end, is sort of what's the distinction between clarity and depth of understanding and murkiness? Because both of them sometimes can seem, you know, really deep somehow, but one of them is and one of them isn't. And I think that I don't want to lose in this idea of mixing a sense of a depth of tradition within both. So I would say that it doesn't necessarily mean that you shouldn't have to apply to particular schools or to particular disciplines, even really well structured disciplines. I think it's understanding that in spite of these disciplines, we need to understand that knowledge has to reach beyond them. Okay, thank you very much.
What about the bonus question?
Are you serious? This is. You called my bluff because I don't actually know. this is in the investiture crisis, which was in the 11th century, and so Hildebrand and Henry the Fourth. Somebody else will know this better than me. But anyways, this is sort of the moment, one of the founding moments of the Western legal tradition, where there was a division between the two powers, between the church and the state. So this is a picture depicting one, the Pope on the right, and the emperor on the left, and the negotiation of power. Yeah, you're welcome.